Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo, and welcome to, we'll call this What If, because this is the beginning of a series which me and Tom have been planning for a little while and looking at in terms of just how you could corner it and how we could talk about things. And with some of the things that we've seen today, we thought there is no better time to start it. So this working title, as we have literally decided to record it after we've done our Man City preview, is What If Antonio Conte had remained at Chelsea. So if you haven't seen it, Matt Law had an interview with Antonio Conte and discussed all his time in England and obviously his philosophy, his style of football. And one of the more interesting quotes we saw was that in the summer of 2017, Chelsea were apparently very close to signing a certain Dutch centre-back called Virgil van Dijk, as well as Romelu Lukaku. And the quote goes, "In my first season at Chelsea, when we won the title, we could have become dominant in England. We spoke with Lukaku and van Dijk, and with those two important players, we could have changed the situation." Damn, that says a lot. That really says a lot. Tom, van Dijk, Romelu Lukaku.
Who?
And then the signings we made. I mean, look, okay, can I be honest, right? I think Romelu Lukaku, under Conte, in that season, especially after how well he'd been doing at Everton, would have been a different beast and a completely different person. I think you wouldn't have seen the weight issues that he had at Manchester United. And obviously, he went to Inter Milan. Conte stuck him on a diet, very regimented, knew exactly how to deal with him. I appreciate it was Romelu Lukaku in Italy. But still, I mean, if you look at the numbers that Romelu Lukaku put up at Manchester United, obviously, you know, he did have the touch of Timberland boots, but
he could finish.
You think he could finish, and the centre forward he was, the beast he was at Everton, I think he'd been fantastic. And I mean, Virgil van Dijk speaks for itself. I mean, what do you think about those quotes, or one of that quote, shall I say?
It's just really sad, isn't it? It's just really, really sad. I think, yeah, well, obviously with the benefit of hindsight, you're like, why not, you know? And in a few moments, I'm going to take you through who he actually signed, and it's quite different from Van Dijk and Lukaku in his prime. You know, and you look at Van Dijk at Liverpool, and he completely changed their team. I think he was probably their most important signing. Obviously, Salah was their best value signing. And Alisson was also hugely important, but actually Robertson.
And Fabinho, don't forget Fabinho as well.
Probably their best value signing. I take that back. And yeah, Fabinho, I mean, and Mane, like, they had a lot of very good signings made in a row, which is why they became what they are now. But Van Dijk is, I mean, he's not as high as some people say he is in terms of all-time Premier League centre-backs. But in the modern day, he's absolutely fantastic. He's back to his best this season. After, you know, recovering from that injury, which took a while. But yeah, when he was in his pomp, the year they won the Champions League, the year they won the league, he was untouchable in the world, I think. And yeah, he would have obviously massively changed the Chelsea team. And I think those two under Conte would have been exciting. But in the end, we got something quite different. I can read it to you if you want, but maybe you want to say your opinions first before I read this depressing list.
I mean, yeah, I'm just trying to think who's on that list. And I also remember that was the summer that I covered the transfers quite closely. And it was a very depressing summer in terms of signing we made. There was one player I wish we had signed, but obviously Liverpool actually beat us to the punch with him. And I think maybe we could have seen something with him, and I think it would have fitted how Conte plays his football really well. And that was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Obviously, that summer I thought, you know, he was looking to play in the middle. You talk about the high energy and how he played our football. I think he would have been a fantastic signing. And obviously could have been someone you see at right wing back in replacement of Victor Moses, or, you know, in terms of somebody else. And obviously we signed somebody else instead. I think that summer Conte should have been back to the hilt. You know, what he did in the 16-17 season was nothing short of a miracle. Nothing short of a miracle. And, you look at where Chelsea were, and I appreciate that people are saying, well, you still had some amazing players, you just got someone working and doing it right. He changed the face of English football. He did that single-handedly, and the system's still used today. You know, that high line, the back three, you still see it in football in the UK now and in the Premier League. And what he did that season and the way he played his football, the way that the team developed, the way that we were simply untouchable for such a long period of time. You know, going to the Etihad, which I think was always going to be the toughest test, and playing City off the park. Absolutely playing City off the park. You know, he was talking about here in his quote, you know, like, you need to be entertaining as well as, you know, robust. And, you know, it's so important. He was, the football we played was entertaining because it was effective. And we had some fantastic games that season as well. You know, Everton, 5-0 at home. John Motson did the commentary on that for BBC Five Live and said that that team and that display was the best he's ever seen in the Premier League. Better than the Invincibles, better than Class 92, better than Chelsea 04-05, better than that City team. He said that is the best display he had ever seen in a football match. And, you know, Chelsea were fantastic. And obviously people talk about, you know, Conte was overly defensive and whatever, right? I don't agree with any of that. I think the second season was just when he wasn't backed. And I mean, look, let's get straight into it. Rip it off like a plaster. Give me that summer signing list.
Well, this is the weird thing is he was backed in terms of the funny, not in terms of the signings, but in terms of the money they spent. They spent 260 million euros, so still quite a lot of money. I think his big issue, Conte, for me, and the one mistake he made, which probably proved to be fatal, was how he got rid of Diego Costa. Probably arguably getting rid of Diego Costa in the first place, but the fact that he did it over text left a bit of a sour taste for me.
That's true. Yeah, I agree.
But he left. So Costa left to Atletico for 60 million euros. Nemanja Matic went to United for 44 million. Those are probably the two main exits. Ake to Bournemouth, Cuadrado to Juve, Begovic to Bournemouth, Bertrand Traoré to Lyon, and then others left as well. But the ins is when it gets a slightly depressing, really. Morata. 66 million euros.
God, he was shite.
Timmy Bakayoko.
Oh,
40 million euros.
Can I just say something on him, by the way?
Great chance.
On that one signing. No, as much as I love the fact that, you know, it was me and Chris that came up with that chant, and I'm very happy about that, I'm very disappointed with the quality of player. And I always said, we don't need to get rid of Nathaniel Chalobah. Why are we signing Bakayoko? Keep Chalobah. And I got laughed out of the room for that. And I was right. Because I was there at Watford. I was there at City. Oh my God.
That Watford performance is possibly the worst performance from a Chelsea player I've ever seen.
I'm trying to think. There's been a few recent.
There have been a few. There have been a few in the more recent past, sadly. But yeah. I mean, what? Just absolutely disgraceful. Horrible performance. But yeah, he was 40 million euros. We went to that Monaco team. I'm going to have to redo that. Just wait for him to fuck off. Anyway, we went to that Monaco team and we managed to take the only player who wasn't good, which is something. City went and found the good ones. Liverpool found a very good one. Well, I say City found the good ones. They found one very good one and one who proved to be a rather awful human being. Liverpool found a very good one. Obviously, the best of the lot is at PSG now. Yeah, we went and found Bakayoko for 40 million euros, which is interesting. I think it gets worse, though. The next signing's probably the worst of this lot. Danny Drinkwater.
I actually feel kind of sorry for Danny Drinkwater because he was signed or was supposed to be signed the summer before as well. Apparently Conte wanted him and Kante to form a double pivot.
Right.
Because obviously it worked at Leicester. And I do feel like there could have been a player in there. But, like, I don't think he was a starter. I think Danny Drinkwater could have been a very, very capable understudy. Very capable understudy. But it just wasn't meant to be, was it? The injuries and everything. It just fell
great
apart.
Great goal against Stoke, but we didn't pay 37.9 million euros for that. All these prices, by the way, are from Transfer Market, which is why they're in euros. Antonio Rudiger for 35 million euros. Initially, not great. Ended up becoming pretty good, obviously, but not under Conte. That was essentially who we got instead of Van Dijk. To be fair, FA Cup final, he was our best player. I remember that.
Yeah, I think he started off okay as well. I remember his first game. You know, obviously we were awful in that first game against Burnley. Mm. But I couldn't help but laugh because every time he got the ball from about the halfway line, everyone shouted shoot. He'd always do it. It was hilarious.
And then we got the Brentford moment 5 years later.
Exactly. But, you know, I think he was never terrible. I think he was just a pretty bog-standard, solid centre-back. And then that time under Tuchel was when he just became otherworldly. Yeah. He was just unbelievable. And his comments about Tuchel, actually, when he brought him back into the side, was so important. You know, talking about how he actually asked him about him as a human and how he didn't want to let him down and how he fought for him. And, you know, having that sort of character was amazing. So, you know what? Not a bad signing at all for Chelsea.
No.
Absolutely fantastic player.
Well, actually ended up being very good, but imagine what Van Dijk would have been there instead for Conte. It's Davide Zappacosta. 25 million.
Euros. The Carabag goal.
Exactly. We essentially signed him for that and his incredible moustache. Didn't last. Didn't really ever make much inroad into the first 11, really, to be honest.
He was never meant to, was he? I don't think he was. He was always going to be an understudy. But, I mean, again, like, this is what I think about the Italian league. Like, there aren't very many good players that I think within their top four would make a top four in a Premier League team. I think you could stick, I generally think you could stick us in there right now, or West Ham, who just lost 6-0 to Arsenal, or, you know, Brighton, and we could win that league. I don't think the quality's there at all. Like, people talk about Inter Milan, how technically brilliant they are. It's like, no, it's irrelevant. You know, they'll say talent teams reach X amount of finals. Yeah, but in terms of actual quality over 38 games, I think we'd play them off the park. We did it to AC Milan last year. AC Milan were the champions, and we played them off the park in two legs. So, you know, I don't think the quality is there in Italian football. And I think Zappacosta's a prime example of that, as was Emerson when we signed him in the January as well.
Yeah, I was just about to get to that. We also signed Ethan Ampadu from Exeter City for 2.8 million. And Willy Caballero. For free, and then the three promotions from the academy were Tammy Abraham, Charlie Musonda, and Fikayo Tomori. There's a couple of what could have beens there as well. And then in January, we signed Emerson from Roma for 20 million. We signed Giroud from Arsenal for 17 million. And we signed Ross Barkley from Everton for 16.8 million euros. And obviously Barkley currently having a very good season at Luton. But at Chelsea, he had a couple of brilliant moments. That goal against Liverpool, for example. But never really quite did what we hoped. I mean, we signed him with one hamstring. But we thought, you know what, for this much money and what he'd shown previously at Everton, maybe worth a shot. Sadly, it never quite came to fruition. But that's the extent of those signings that season. Financially, in terms of the money spent, as I said, he was backed. But in terms of how many players in there who were genuine top quality, I think you can say Giroud and in the end Rudiger, and I think that's it. Morata obviously came with a bit of promise as a 24-year-old from Real Madrid, but he didn't have the mentality. He doesn't have the mentality to be an elite performer. He's a decent finisher, which is why he's ended up playing for Juventus and Atletico 48 times each on a money laundering scheme. That keeps happening, but he's not got the mentality to play as an elite number nine, I don't think, and he quite quickly fell out. He didn't fall out with the fans, I think he had one bad game and the fans just sort of went, well, that's not good enough, and then he had a bit of an injury as well.
I think it wasn't just the one bad game, he had the injury and he kept having the injury. Because he was always on Instagram and he was always picking up his misses or, you know, throwing his kids in the air and all that sort of stuff. And it was like, okay, well, look, obviously, you know, it's great you have a loving family. But then he keep getting his back injured. It's like, okay, maybe stop doing that. Like, I appreciate the love, but maybe whilst your back is healing, don't do stuff like that. But then it was that, and he was the original Timo Werner. He was always offside. It was horrendous. I remember I was at Arsenal in the League Cup when he was put through in the back of the net. I was offside every single time. I think he had one really, really good game which was the hat trick against Stoke.
Yeah,
he had only had one really, really good game, and then he had a few moments where him and Aspilicueta, you know, linked up really well. And
United, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, he had that bullet header, but you know, like you said, mentally, he just didn't have it, and you know, it's a shame. It's a shame because I did always enjoy when he came in. You know, at the beginning, I thought he showed his quality, and then you know, even in that season afterwards was sorry, you know, there was opportunities and times he showed his capability, but he just couldn't deal with the physicality. It just wasn't his bag at all.
No. But imagine what that could have been. So that's Lukaku for Morata, which is Conte made it very, very obvious, I think quite early on, that he always wanted Lukaku over Morata. He didn't get him. Lukaku went to United. So yeah, imagine that's Lukaku. Imagine that's Van Dijk instead of Rudiger, who, you know, obviously that kind of pains me to say now because of what Rudiger became for Chelsea, and I love him, but I think Van Dijk probably over time would have... Well, in fact, I'm not even going to say I think Van Dijk would have been a better signing, obviously. Bakayoko, Drinkwater, who were the sort of alternatives to those two that actually could have bolstered the midfield? Because he got rid of Matic, which at the time... I don't really think I massively thought about, but I think looking at it now, it looks mental.
It looked mental at the time, but then you saw the season he had at United.
Mm.
He had a good 6 months, but then you could see he was slowing down. That was one where you could see that Matic wasn't quite the same player. But, you know, it was him anchoring that midfield that just allowed Kante to do what Kante does, which is just run around. But, you know, I do think that there could have been a better choice there. I think we looked at, well, obviously, like I said, Alex looked at Chamberlain as an option in that midfield. He probably would have been more on the right-hand side, which was would have been interesting to see what happened with that. But again, that was a player laden with injuries, as we saw at Liverpool. But, you know, he's seems picking up form now, but it is in Turkey. I think one other, or a couple of other names to chuck in that list, Leonardo Bonucci, Khalidou Koulibaly, who we signed anyway, probably just 5 years too late.
Yep.
There was a lot of names on that list, which you looked at. I was like, oh, do you know what? Like, there's some decent names here. But I'd, in terms of bolstering that team, I'd have sacrificed Drinkwater for investing more heavily in another position. Or, you know, I do think that there was opportunities there because... This was the thing with Chelsea then, and I think towards the back end of Roman Abramovich, was we never set ourselves up to challenge consistently. And like Conte said there, it's like we could have dominated. Like, I think signing Virgil van Dijk, Chelsea would still be up there. Would still be up there. Or we'd have let him go on a free because he's over 30. You know, something stupid like that would have happened. But I do think, can you imagine, I think, look, Gary Cahill, Virgil van Dijk and Aspilicueta as a back three. Wow. Like that's really not bad at all. And the options you'd have had for players coming through and learning as well. You know, for Kaya Tomori would have come through and learnt from van Dijk and maybe not gone out. I think Tammy Abraham, Lukaku. I think if we got Lukaku, we just never would have seen Tammy Abraham at all. Because I think that Lukaku would have been... A different player. Purely if you look at all the dietary restrictions that Conte had at Chelsea, like he was vicious with how he dealt with player diets, and I think I should go and see Antonio Conte quite soon about that, all that sort of stuff. But you know, it's I do think we would have seen a different team, and it would have been really interesting. And I like what he was saying in these quotes as well. You know, where he was talking about how, you know, it's important to entertain and also work hard. You know, it's stuff like that where I think also what goes understated as well is, you know, there's only three coaches that have won the league against Pep Guardiola, and that is Mourinho at Real Madrid, Klopp at Liverpool, and us under Conte. You know, he talks about how important it is. Conte even says on that it's not easy. Guardiola is the best coach in the world, and then when you can match the best coach in the world with a club that can back you and you can invest in bringing in important players to improve the team every season because they want to stay on top of the world, it's very difficult to compete at the same level, which was so important. I know, he was saying that my history says that I always arrived at clubs in difficult situations with problems. I always build. After my first season at Chelsea, when we won the title, we could have dominated England. We spoke to Lukaku, spoke to Van Dijk, and those important players would have changed the situation. You know, it's somewhere he sort of sits there. It's like, imagine.
Yeah.
Like, the man's mentality speaks for itself.
Yeah. Do you think, had we got those two signings and one other, say Oxlade-Chamberlain or whoever, you know, in the midfield that could have then bolstered that area of the sort of squad, do you think we might have had our own little dynasty like City have had with Guardiola, like Liverpool have had with Klopp? Do you think, or do you think Conte is that such a passionate, fiery manager in the mould of Mourinho that actually he may have only stuck around for another season or two anyway before pissing everyone off?
I think we might have seen 3 or 4 years of Conte. I think we might have seen 3 or 4 years. I think what might have happened, though, is you'd see the backing that season. Because let's be honest, Virgil van Dijk was a world record fee that City backed away from as well. Lukaku was 70-odd million to United. So straight away there, we're talking about spending, what was it, 260 million across those two windows. We'd have spent 140 on two players. So I don't think we'd have seen the same level of signings coming in for another year or two. And we might have just delayed the inevitable.
But then having said that, we spent, 106 million euros on Morata and Bakayoko. So, you know, an extra 50 million on premium player. I mean, at the time, to be fair, we weren't quite sure what the difference was between Morata and Lukaku. Currently, Morata would be better than Lukaku, but obviously I think Lukaku, as you say, under Conte probably would have thrived. But I don't know, I think there's a lot of players in there that you're kind of almost like we did under Lampard when we signed Havertz and Ziyech and Werner and all these players at the same time. It was just signing these players for the sake of it because we could, although they were obviously had a higher reputation than some of these ones. But I don't know, there doesn't seem to be much logic behind many of these, really.
Well, I think Bakayoko came in because we got rid of Chalobah and got rid of Matic. So we needed to sign a defensive midfielder. So obviously Monaco was flavour of the month after knocking City out of the Champions League. So we went in there and picked the wrong one. I think Fabinho was obviously the better option there. but he was playing it right back in that season, I think. I don't think he was even defensive midfielder at that point. We had that. Jao Moutinho, Bakayoko, and who was it? It was Bernardo Silva, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then you had Mbappe on the right wing. You had Falcao down the middle.
Yeah.
Like that was an interesting team. God. But yeah, you know, Bakayoko was another one which was flavour of the month, which is something that football fans never seem to learn. It does my head in sometimes when you see in a transfer window all the players that people get linked with and, you know, the flavour of the month, sort of everyone banging on about these players that they say they watch every week in defensive tandems and covering the midfield zones. It's like, no, just can we just look at the players? It's like Ibrahim Sangare, who's done all right at Nottingham Forest, but, you know, everyone was sort of, oh, you know, when we sign him, because we're looking at, what was it, last summer, to come in as covering defensive midfield. So, yeah, Sangare, like, he's unbelievable at PSV. And it's like, okay, well, can we just like slow down it? He looks solid, but he's nothing special. You know, it's stuff like where Bakayoko, I just wasn't convinced after 6 months. And we'd already had someone in Chalobah who had come in and proven his mettle. Obviously, I would have said the summer after, sign another defensive midfielder or look for quality. But I think realistically, with Conte, like you said, you know, he was very fiery and people talk about his time at Tottenham. I think his time at Tottenham, obviously there was a toxic relationship by the end. I think one, that's because of the DNA of that club and there's a reason he kicked off when he did. I agree with him. No, it is though. That's the thing. Like he talks about the history of the Tottenham or that the players don't have desire to deal with pressure. It's true. Tottenham players do not have desire to deal with pressure. There's a reason they haven't won anything for so long. And they're still not going to win anything this season. Daniel Levy, obviously, in terms of how he ran the club, again, same problem. But then I think what people talk about less, which they talk about in this article, actually, so credit to Matt Law. This is absolutely... It was a really interesting read. I really enjoyed it because it really dove into who he was. But I think, you know, there was obviously the Sergio with his gallbladder, which was life-threatening, but also he lost 4 friends in 4 months. You know, he had a really, really tough time. And that obviously had a massive impact because after that surgery and losing his friends in that short period, which were massive to him settling in England. And Gianluca Vialli obviously was one of his best friends. They played together at Juventus. He obviously helped him bed in at Chelsea. You know, they were really, really close. And you just saw him deteriorate. And mentally, you know, he talks about how difficult that time was for him. You know, even the Tottenham fitness coach who was with him was at Juventus as well, Giampiero Ventrone. But, you know, he did get support from Daniel Levy in that period and Tottenham. But, you know, he's an elite coach. And he even went on to say, obviously, when he left, you know, they won't finish top four. They'll finish ninth. They'll finish 10th, 11th. They finished eighth. They finished eighth. So he's not stupid. He knows what he's talking about. And I appreciate there's that fiery character, which a lot of people don't like. And again, like I said, he was talking about how people talk about his football being boring and not really getting the job done. I think the biggest issue with Chelsea in that second season was because he wasn't backed with the elite players that he wanted, he was dealing with scraps and players that were second and third on his wish of transfers. You know, it's, it really soured the relationship between him and Chelsea, which then obviously led to the situation we saw when he sued the club for millions. And obviously at Tottenham as well, another sad relationship. But that's what you get when you get people who want to be on top of the game. That's what you deal with. You deal with those sort of people who are elite managers and are fiery. Thomas Tuchel's the same, you know. Mourinho is the same. Guardiola is the same. Klopp is the same. These are all men which are very fiery, very passionate, and have a mentality which takes them to the top. And there's a reason why Conte deserves more credit than he got in my eyes. I think a lot of people don't give him the credit he deserves, purely because of how sour it was at the end. But, you know, again, like I said, if you haven't read this article, I think it's so important to read it, because all of this which he talks about is so important. It really, really dives into who he is. And I was a massive fan. You know, even he talks about here at Tottenham, right? He goes, for me to celebrate fourth place in the Champions League was really strange. At the end of the final game against Norwich, I called my staff and said, pay attention, don't be used to celebrating a Champions League place. I was very clear. I said we did the maximum. From ninth to fourth place, with all the problems we faced, it was a miracle. But we didn't celebrate it like a miracle because I'm used to winning. Hearing that, like, the passion he showed, the passion he exuded, like, I thought after him, we got Frank down the line, which was a great season, that 1920 season. It was a lot of fun. I think it's because there was no expectations on us, really. But after Conte, I thought, I don't think I'm going to see someone who is so intertwined and so connected to us as fans and also provided that winning mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, well, we're lucky, I think. We're lucky, I think, to have had these managers who, because some clubs never really get them or struggle to get them. You know, look at Palace now with Hodgson, who obviously, you know, they've had some good times with, but I don't think he's ever really that manager who gives you that oomph that we've had. Obviously, Mourinho, Conte, Tuchel, Ancelotti, we didn't have that kind of same kind of passion, but he had the charisma and he played such nice football. We loved him. Obviously, Frank, we had the connection with already. You know, we've had a lot of managers that we've had them with. We've also had our fair few that we haven't had them with and we've absolutely despised. It seems to be a love-hate thing, really. You know, looking at Sarri, he was very unpopular. Vs Boas, Scolari, these are all unpopular managers.
Benitez
obviously came in with that reputation and things he said before. But yeah, I think we're lucky. And I hold Conte in such high regard. I was genuinely gutted when he went. Really, really upset because I just thought he was such a good manager. And what he'd done, as you said, literally was a miracle. You know, that iconic image of Marcus Alonso with the three fingers up coming off the bench at 3-0 down to Arsenal. Who would have thought of that season that we'd then go and do what we did that you know, the rest of that season. Revolutionised the league, like you said. Absolutely blitzed past teams. One of my favourite, if not my favourite ever, win as a Chelsea fan. Well, probably not. It's got to be the Champions League finals. But favourite Premier League win, without a doubt, City away on the Conte. Yeah. Where we absolutely battered them on the counter-attack. And they lost their heads. The passion he had, you know, jumping into the crowd. That West Brom game, even with Batshuayi scoring, and the passion we had. There was a massive connection there. And I'm still sad now, even thinking back on it, that we didn't get to keep him for more than two seasons. You know, he broke his cup curse with Chelsea. Could never win a cup. Obviously, had got Anthony Taylor in his first one, and then in the second one, managed to beat United and win a cup. You know, in 2 years at Chelsea, we've spoken about whether he was backed or not, but he had a good squad that could have been a great squad, and he won an FA Cup and a Premier League. So I think it is a massive case of what if in the ultimate what if podcast episode. But yeah, I love him. And if he ever wanted to come back and we needed a manager, I would definitely say yes. I love that bloke.
That was going to be my next question, actually. So let's take that out, right? Obviously, everything that's happened has happened at Chelsea, right? Mm-hmm. I think after Tottenham, there was a lot of fans that were a bit annoyed at him going there. I think Mourinho is a special case because it was Jose. I think everyone was kind of like, Jose was at Spurs. Well, Jose was at United. You didn't like him. But after, okay, it's Jose. We're fine now. Conte, I think, is a very divisive figure. Divisive figure. So even when I spoke to Nico, obviously our mate earlier, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, that second season, it showed he didn't have a plan B, which was true in some cases. You know, he found if you clip the wins with Chelsea, that's all you can do. But then let's bear in mind, he was having to play Hazard up front in some games. So it's stuff like that where I think his toxicity is a difficult thing to get past. But let's say, right, end of the season, Pochettino goes. Mm-hmm. Do you think Todd Bowley would touch Antonio Conte with a barge pole? Because I don't think he would.
He wouldn't, no, because he's past regime and he wants to do his own thing. So I don't think he'd ever call back on an old manager. The only reason he might is to kind of please the fans, you know, if he's cocked up again. And I think the manager he would do for that would 100% be Mourinho. But yeah, no, I don't think it's a possibility that Conte will ever manage Chelsea again, sadly. I think he will obviously feel he has massive unfinished business in England, and he probably does. And whoever does get him again is very lucky. But he is a divisive figure. His standards, as you've said already, are very high. When you're winning, it's fine. You know, in that first season, it was obviously not a problem. The players would have done it, and it was fine. In the second season, when we were losing games, we were struggling in the league a bit, it became apparent that it was harder to keep up, especially I think the extra, obviously competing in the Champions League now, you had midweek games playing at the same intensity. And that was one of the big factors that we won the league at such a canter, that we weren't playing in the Champions League the year Conte came in. We got knocked out of the League Cup fairly early from memory as well. So we weren't even competing in that. It was just the Premier League and the FA Cup with the squad we had, which obviously was a very good squad. It won the Premier League 2 years ago, plus the addition of Kante and a couple of others. So it was a very good team, with you know, probably the perfect circumstances. But as I've said, he is a manager who brings out the best in players, similarly to Mourinho and Tuchel that we've had before, when they brought out success. And I think Chelsea have been very lucky to have these managers. But I do question whether they're these managers who, because they're such passion merchant, passion powered managers who demand such high standards constantly, whether they're all kind of short-term answers. Like, we look at Mourinho, he's never lasted beyond 3 seasons at any club he's been at. So it's not just Chelsea. There is a bit of a link there. And Conte has never had a long-term job either. He's fallen out with boards a lot. And Tuchel as well, we're yet to see him really do that. So I don't think it's just us, is what I'm saying there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tuchel's like a... He's the modern, quote-unquote, modern-day answer almost, sort of like... Where I feel Mourinho and Conte are quite old school in their approach. And Conte is just very Italian. Very Italian in his approach. I do think Tuchel was a bit more measured. And I do think there could have been a more of a future potentially. But I mean, look, the amount of times over the past 2 years where everyone's gone, what if Tuchel stayed? What if? It's a by-the-by situation. And to be honest, that's another conversation for another day. But I mean, Conte coming back, I think it would be, I think you'd get fans in the stadium on side, but I don't think fans who maybe aren't matchgoers would. I mean, actually, that's a harsh step. I mean, what I'm trying to get at is, I think if you look at Conte and then you look at afterwards, I don't think Chelsea Twitter specifically was as divisive and as toxic as it was after the arrival of Mauricio Sarri. Agreed. I think when Sarri came in, that's when it got horrible.
Yeah.
And I think if Twitter was like it was before that arrival, and Conte came in now, I think you'd have people being vocal, but I don't think it would be as big of a thing. I think you'd see a lot of issues and a lot of people being very toxic with each other. And I think it'd be a horrible place to be, you know, outside of the ground. Because I think, look, being very fortunate, and I am very fortunate, that's what I was saying earlier about non-match going fans, that wasn't a dig. It's in general that sort of, I think you have a different appreciation of the culture if you go to the games, and that's fine. You know, the whole point of what we're trying to do at the Chelsea Echo on the sideline is show that culture and allow people to get involved and understand it more. And, you know, we want people to be able to feel what we feel. And I think going to games under Conte in that first season, going to games under Frank in his season in charge before COVID, you know, Tuchel, you had this connection with a person which I don't think you get if you're not there, if you can't feel it. And there's a certain way of thinking and a certain culture if you're at games every week which is so important, and it really shows. And you know, I do think football fandom and football culture is so important to appreciate all the nuances. You know, when I was in New York, being able to watch fan football with the New York Blues, and when I was in Australia, watching it in Melbourne, watching it in Sydney, you see that appreciation. Because I'm going to be brutally honest, I couldn't get up at 5 a.m. every week to watch Chelsea. But I probably wouldn't. But there's these people that do it every single week, which obviously have this mad fanaticism, is that the right word? And it's amazing to see. You know, it's so cool. And you see them want to be at the ground, and want to get involved, and want to understand it. But then you have the other side of the people who don't go to matches, who don't want to go and get involved, who don't want to do that, and just talk about standards and talk about Twitter tactics and talk about... Those are the people which I can't stand. I'll be brutally honest. I can't do it, because it's a two-way conversation. It's about encompassing and understanding everything. And I do feel like if Conte came in now, it would be horrible. And I don't think he'd mix well with these young players, because he'd want certain things straight away which just aren't going to happen. But I do think there would be an understanding and a cultural impact straight away. But it's just whether or not we'd see that for more than 2 years. I think that's the big thing.
Well, I think that's a great way to wrap up the first ever episode of What If. There are many more to come, some football related, some more topical, yeah, at the time, to do with the yearly cycle of life or just general events. This was a very, as Louis said, very impromptu episode. We just thought, you know what, let's talk about Conte. And so we have. Yeah, hope you enjoyed it. There'll be many more. And yeah, I hope it's... If you close your eyes and just imagine Antonio Conte jumping into the stand right now, I hope that's what it's brought back to you.
Oh, my heart. My heart just went, oh, it's beautiful. I love it. Give me something like, oh, I'd love for Potts just to go nuts. It's just one game. Like, not quite like it was crying when he reached Champions League final, but just, I want to see that fire. Like, do you remember when he got booked at the beginning of the season? I was like, yes, I want that every week. That's what we're about. Let's have a bit of fire about it. Mm. But we'll see. We'll see. But I hope you guys have enjoyed What If, guys. Let us know your thoughts, actually, as well. And if we could try not and be toxic, that would be lovely. That's the big thing with us. Obviously, remember, like with the final score shows, just be respectful, have a conversation with each other, and that's a big thing. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. We appreciate all the love on the pod. And yeah, we'll see you later. Tada.
Hasta luego.